Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Matt Davis Adams. Welcome back to Parts Unknown, the wrestling podcast that offers a comprehensive WrestleMania rewind. I mean, we're watching all the WrestleManias and then talking about them for a bit. It's ever so much fun. Today, we're chatting all things Mania 15, the super show that took place at the First Union Center in that hotbed of wrestling, Philadelphia. The show happened on the 28th of March 1999 before a crowd of just north of 20,000, and it's one of those that as a child seemed great, watching it again as an adult not so much, although praise be to the higher power, it's under 3 hours. As you know by now, I've got my trusty faction alongside me, Muddy Knees Media's very own version of the Ministry of Darkness. First up, DDP calls him Axel, we call him Anton, and sometimes Axel because it amuses us. From Sky Sports News, it's Anton Tolui.
Hello there.
Next, she has a master's in wrestling, if only a basic grasp of thugonomics. I think you better recognise Dr. Carrie Dunn.
Hello.
And last but not least, by day he has his fingers in a vast assortment of media pies, but by night he's the PU crew's very own hired gun. It's Carl Anker.
Hello.
Well, that was rather prosaic, but okay.
Hello, everyone.
Ah, nice, that's better. Before we get to the matches, Boys to Men kick things off with a rendition of America the Beautiful. Anton, what's your favourite Boys to Men song and why is it I'll Make Love to You?
Hang on, was that a proposition?
We'll see how this show goes.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, get me a couple more beers.
All right. To the matches then, and seeing as it had ramifications for the main event, let's start with Mankind versus the Big Show, Paul White. The stip here was that the winner got to referee Austin versus Rock for the WWF title later in the night. Big Show using his real name here, having left WCW when he was the Giant. He'd left earlier in the year and debuted during the Austin McMahon match at February's St. Valentine's Day Massacre pay-per-view. He came out to Vince's music here. He signed a 10-year contract with a massive downside guarantee. Carrie, fair to say that the WWF would come to regret that. It didn't exactly motivate him?
Not so much, but I can't imagine what they were expecting, to be honest. This is just Big Show doing Big Show things, surely. And yeah, the Vince music thing was weird, and all I've got written down for this match is Vince keeps saying damn it. That's literally my note on this match.
But it's good the way he says it, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it's very Vince, but when you're doing it a billion times in the space of about 10 minutes, not so great.
Anton, can you explain, in this match, Show got himself DQ'd. Now, he was Vince's hired gun, essentially. Why did he get himself DQ'd when he was supposed to win the match to become the referee?
Yeah, I mean, he did a terrible job, didn't he? Let's be brutally honest. And also, it's Vince's company. Why didn't you just make it a no DQ match? Oh, Vince just accepts the results. I go, oh, my plans have been scuppered. As opposed to just thinking, oh, hang on, let me just rectify this. It was very odd. But anyone that gets chokeslammed through two chairs is, you know, quite fun. It was all right. I actually quite enjoyed this. One thing I don't understand about Mankind is the mandible claw. Why doesn't someone just bite him?
You cannot.
Yes, you can't. Now, he explains this, doesn't he, in his book?
It's not just fingers in your mouth. It's fingers in your mouth underneath your tongue on a pressure point. So it's a legitimate hole. A mandible claw done correctly is basically hits two muscles and nerve.
So it almost paralyzes the jaw.
Yeah, you're hitting two nerve clusters underneath your tongue, so therefore it is impossible in real life to bite down.
Carl, for 2 bonus points, do you know who actually invented that move?
I will have to pass, referee.
Anybody else? It was the doctor who was the star of the film The Fugitive. Now, when he was cleared of murdering his wife, he couldn't get work as a doctor again, so he did some stuff in independent wrestling, and one of those was to come up with that move as a finisher.
Ah.
That is fascinating.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? How was Foley for you here, Carl?
It's very odd because Attitude Era, Mankind and Mick Foley is less interesting than just a couple of years earlier. So when he first arrives, he's got ECW, the boiler room stuff, just really just like visceral and scary. And
pulling his own hair out and
deranged.
Stuff.
And then he becomes this sort of comedy figure of fun. You know, Rock and Sock was great. A lot of these feuds were great, but it's just like, okay, fine.
So he won by DQ. A post-match beatdown meant Kevin Kelly telling us he'd been taken to a hospital, not a local medical facility,
no.
A hospital. Extraordinary stuff. Does anyone remember the Union, the shortly-lived faction that was formed after this?
Up yours?
It was Big Show, Foley, Ken Shamrock and Test. And Vince was in it for about a week as well, as he was kind of pretending that he wasn't part of the corporate ministry.
This is proper car crash, Vince Russo, WrestleMania stuff, where this feels less like a WrestleMania, more just episode 6 of a ongoing run, which when it doesn't work is very, very confusing and bizarre because nothing truly has consequence. But the fun thing about this WrestleMania is everything is connected to something else. So you've got this overarching thing about the corporation, and also you've got Undertaker doing weird stuff with the ministry in one corner. Then you've got like the budding union stuff in one corner. You've got the Nation of Domination doing other stuff. It's really fun. Everyone seems to have something to do. And I'd like that to happen again in modern day product, but there's just far too much programming to deal with that scripting, I think.
When you finish listening to this podcast, go and search the Titantron for the union. It's a whistle like you'd get in a factory to indicate the end of a shift, and then just "We are the union" repeated.
That sounds awful.
It's pretty special.
You didn't sell that.
From there, we'll go to the main event: Rock, the champion, versus Steve Austin, part one of the trilogy. HBK, the commissioner, thwarts Vince's plan to be ref here. A very different match to the one they had at 17. Did the no DQ stip help or hinder them here? They didn't spend much time in the ring, Carrie. I'd sort of forgotten that.
Yeah, it was not ring-based at all. HBK in his full Miami Vice mode, which I actually quite enjoy that, I suppose, as far as I ever enjoy Shawn Michaels' things. Yeah, I enjoyed this. This was good fun, but very different to what they did at 17, and it doesn't seem to be kind of, it doesn't feel like the same characters either. It's a completely different story and different people acting it, almost, if that makes sense.
Cole, you said that we maybe look back on the final match at 19 through rose-tinted spectacles. Is this one number 2 out of 3 then, in terms of ranking the three matches?
Yeah, I think comfortably. I think, again, because it's less about Rock versus Austin and more about this larger story of Stone Cold versus Vince McMahon, which does somewhat of a disservice to The Rock. So he was the corporate champion at the time because he turned heel and started working with Vince. Something I found really nice, I think it was 2 years ago, The Rock uploaded a photograph to Instagram and basically thanked Stone Cold. I don't want to say holding his hand, but basically getting the locker room to calm down about the fact that Rock was going to headline this WrestleMania. So apparently The Rock was really, really nervous. There were murmurings backstage that The Rock wasn't ready for this main event slot. And basically Stone Cold went, "All of you shut up. This guy's legit. He's the champ. We're going to go down there and tear the house down." It's a great match. It's got that bizarre, ludicrous, brawling violence that only really occurs when a Stone Cold match happens, where they're just like rolling around the floor and you don't know if they're punching or kissing. And it's great because it's just got to overwhelm you with my being.
Your kissing technique is weird.
And then you get a Luthez press every so often, which Mick Foley called a move so silly it should be called the dick to the mouth, which I think is quite accurate. Anton, if Rock wasn't maybe at his peak here, it's interesting what Carl's saying there, because he managed to avoid that kind of Machiavellian scheming that goes on behind the scenes. We know that he and Triple H weren't the best of friends during this time. Obviously, Shawn was kicking around too. Do you think that's because Stone Cold had his back, or Vince, or because his dad and his granddad had said, "Listen, this is how the business works," and maybe alerted him to some of the potential pitfalls?
I think mainly the latter, but also I think Vince is good at what he does. Like him or loathe him, Vince is good at what he does. And it's clear to see Rock's promos. Any time The Rock went in the ring, he got a reaction. They knew he was the guy. You know, he might not have had a traditional wrestling route, and obviously he had his family background, and some people felt like he was thrust into the main event, but he was going to be the guy. They knew, and they backed him, which, rightly or wrongly, you know, was a bit of a risk at the time, I'm sure. But this was, as Carl said, it was a fantastic match. It's what I think of the era. This is the best kind of version of that match. Just chaotic, and there's a feud there. There's multiple feuds kind of going on, but it's great. And the crowd are really into it, which makes the intensity even more believable. And So when I look back at the feud, I really, really like this match. I think it's definitely number 2 of 3, as you said. And there's great little spots that, you know, the reversal over the lighting structure when Stone Cold's knee bends backwards and looks genuinely painful. And so it's not just fighting on the outside for the sake of it. There's some really nice choreographed moves as well as just, "I want to tear you apart," which I think this match is actually quite underrated. I really enjoyed it.
So those two did their part, but we could have done without the unprotected chair shots to the referee's head, and maybe the McMahon interference. Once again, it's kind of a main event that's all about Vince. That's going to get less and less as we go back through the years. But at this stage, he just couldn't help himself, could he?
at this stage, any time in the past 20 years. Yeah, I guess because it's so far back, you kind of cut him a little bit more slack, and it's not so kind of cliche for that to happen, the McMahon interference, as it would be now. But I'm kind of finding this interesting talking about the way that The Rock developed into a main eventer, because obviously we're seeing the same thing now, kind of keeping faith with Roman Reigns in the main event. Obviously also has got that family background, and yet that isn't working. So what's the difference between then and now, do you think?
I think it's because Roman didn't have the heel run, didn't get the corporate champion run, didn't get the I'm going to completely destroy Billy Gunn's singles career on the mic. Because Roman Reigns instead just went suffering succotash, here's me with another fight with Big Show. I'm sure there is a version of Roman Reigns that can be amazing and do the stuff The Rock does, but I don't think WWE has enough, well, trust the talent outside of Roman Reigns to let him do it.
Or Roman Reigns himself.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Rock in The Rock, in the characters. There's a lot of Dwayne Johnson in The Rock. Whereas Roman Reigns is actually just quite a nice mum and really charming guy. But that doesn't come across in your champ. You need him to be, you know, this is my yard. He's kind of saying the lines that you expect that guy to be. I don't necessarily believe it's him, especially when you meet him. And that's, I think that's, for me, that's what holds Reigns back. That's what doesn't make him as believable as the guy in the industry, because it's not him. You're not playing a part. He's just playing a part and not massively playing it that well, because I don't think he's massively invested in it.
And also, The Rock had Austin. Yeah. The Rock had Austin, The Rock had Triple H, The Rock had Mankind, The Rock had the greatest supporting cast, I don't want to call them supporting cast, but adversaries and allies in WWE history. Roman Reigns, all the really good wrestling characters in WWE right now, like the best two are The Shield, who are next to him, so he hasn't got anyone to... And the other guy who's fantastic that he can scratch and claw and fight against is Braun Strowman, but they keep getting that feud wrong. So the big one for me was when they did the ambulance match, and then Roman Reigns tried to murder Braun Strowman by reversing the ambulance into the car, and I'm like, you've done it. You've done the double turn. Like, Roman Reigns is a heel, Braun is a face, go with it. And then next week, nope, we're going to stay the course, and Roman Reigns is going to do this. I'm like, come on.
So even when we're talking about something 19 years ago, all Roman roads lead back to Reigns. Let's get back to WrestleMania 15. Triple H versus Kane's the next match we're going to discuss. China had turned on DX to align herself with the corporation in the build. She'd reunite with Trips here. Tell those who didn't live through the period that who the corporation were, Carrie. It was a very faction-heavy period around this time.
Yeah. Oh, God, it's so confusing, all the factions that are going on at this point. But, yes, so China's turn at this point. So I can't even remember how long things have been going on or what the whole kind of time scale was at this point. But the point is that China's interference comes here to turn what actually happens afterwards and then has ramifications throughout the rest of the show and then into the next period of storyline afterwards. China here is also, she's like a glorious Amazon, and she suddenly appears and she gets massive pop, and then she kind of gets thrown into ridiculous matches for the title afterwards as well. And that makes me really sad. And I've got distracted by talking about the corporation, because China just makes me really sad. China and Owen Hart, I can't deal with these WrestleManias. I'm going to have to go and have a lie down. It's awful.
It's interesting that this was kind of the start of Tripp's push as a single star. Even though they took him out of one faction in DX, they didn't feel comfortable enough to just let him run as his own act or as him plus China. He had to be part of the corporation still. Was that necessary, do you think?
Oh, yeah. He's not ready yet. And you see in WrestleMania 16/2000, Triple H's evolution, there you are, is really interesting as a wrestling character. There's that YouTube video by Max Landis, who is not a nice man, but did a very good wrestling video about why wrestling isn't wrestling, which basically went, here is Triple H's entire storyline in wrestling from DX in 1997, 96, all the way up until the present day and the Daniel Bryan feud. And basically, he's the most long-running, interesting character we've got in fiction since, I don't know, ever, possibly. You don't see someone on TV for that long. And I really enjoy these matches, and I really enjoy these WrestleManias, because he clearly needs China. And in the same way, you know, to bring it forward, in the same way right now they're doing Dolph Ziggler, I need Drew McIntyre to get the job done. I always love a wrestling feud where you can't get the thing done without your enforcer. And it's really fascinating where the enforcer is a woman. And it's really fascinating that he is so open about it in so many of these matches. Triple H is very much like, where's China? Get China here right now. I need this done. This match isn't particularly great wrestling. It's very interesting watching young, smaller Triple H in tights have a more varied moveset rather than the 20 moves he does week in, week out later on. But yeah, it's all about China. And we'll be saying this a lot backwards and forwards, that a lot of Triple H in this point in time is all about the person next to him, which is China.
But that's the only interesting thing about him as well. As a character, there's nothing really there that I can see. I mean, this series of WrestleMania that we're watching, I'm not interested in what he's doing ever. It's all about what she's doing or what she could do or the interference she could offer. She's the interesting one.
Which is interesting where you play it forward now and then, you know, the last couple of WrestleManias. The good stuff isn't Triple H. It's what Stephanie's doing behind him. And I don't know if he knows that yet, but Triple H is a really interesting character because there's Triple H, there's Papa Paul, and there's just this weird cypher villain where you just look at him and I hate you because you represent the reign of terror, where just people can politic their way to get the top. You represent everything bad about America and racism because I support Booker T. You represent the bodybuilder thing. You represent this wing, and which is his strength and probably why he's endured for so long. Triple H is fascinating because I don't think he particularly stands for anything other than what you want to put onto him.
Axel, fourth mania here for Trips. We've spoken a lot about him, but Kane, have we given him enough props for the length of his run?
I'm a huge Kane fan, to be honest. I think I get a little bit of stick, actually, because he's just consistent. He's in better matches than you think. We talk most weeks about how similar Undertaker's matches are, similar size. But, you know, Kane is more agile than people give him credit for. He's put in worse storylines a lot of time and will give you a decent midway match. Now, you know, I'm not saying he's the greatest of all time, but we talk about the workhorses of WWE. He's one of the best workhorses they've ever had, in my opinion.
And that character should be one-dimensional, shouldn't it? But you think not only of corporate Kane, but that I am the tag team champions with Daniel Bryan that would come later, which was a hoot.
Yeah, and you think of even his one-dimensional Fire and Brimstone character. He would switch from face to heel to protector of people to demonizer and...
rapper.
But yeah. And his matches tended to go at a half decent. This goes at a half decent pace. It's not, you know, especially in on the pay per views, that he's not as lumbering as many people his size. I'm a huge Kane fan, and I genuinely don't think he gets enough credit.
Pete Rose also featured in this match, and that's all I got to say about that.
I would like to say something about that. I do think it rather undercuts your serious, sad feud with Triple H when you have a man dressed as a chicken preceding it.
A disgraced former baseball legend, by the way. This is a figure who was one hell of a, you know, an MLB legend that got busted for various things and then thought, how can I redeem myself? I'll get into professional wrestling dressed as a chicken.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Right, so next up, we're going to talk about the European title match. Now, this kind of fed into what we spoke about earlier with Triple H and China. It was X-Pac against Shane McMahon. Shenanigans galore after a pre-match promo from a supposedly reunited DX. The fans used to hate X-Pac around this time. Was that because of the Bronco Buster or just his general sort of annoyance? But X-Pac sucks was a sign that you would see at every event.
Yeah, it's because he sucks.
Right, okay.
You could elaborate, but no, that's the short version.
The Stooges took a pre-match pasting here. We know they had would later go on to have a memorable evening gown match, a hardcore evening gown match. They were absolutely fabulous around this time, Carl. I don't know if it was a bit before your time, but two legit Hall of Famers, the first ever Intercontinental Champion in Pat Patterson and Gerald Briscoe, who was, you know, a famed wrestler in his own variety, but more than happy to send themselves up in their role as Vince's lackeys.
Oh, it was great. By all accounts, Pat Patterson is a relative good egg amongst the old guard. Like, sneaks in and has a beer with the NXT lot when they do a takeover. And yeah, it was just great watching him act like a goofball and put over younger talent, which is not what we get often. It's normally the old guy going, hello. Grandfather strength. This match is... I like this match because it's baby Shane before baby... I'm baby Shane. I'm going to try and kill myself for my dad's attention. And the whole match is I'm a slippery oink.
Producer Ben's just shown me the story, which I'd tried to forget about, when X-Pac tore his anus on an independent show last year. But now he's put that image in my head. It's in everybody else's now. People thought he sucked in the crowd, Anton, but I reckon even though he was a bit of a naughty boy away from the ring around this time, the company liked him because he was somebody who could be relied upon basically to make Shane look good in matches like this.
Yeah, and his kick to the face, heel kick, always looked really nice. And I can't stand the Bronco Buster as a move, but it got that attitude kind of era sort of element to it.
It would never hurt though, would it?
No, of course it wouldn't.
It was strangely quite common on the school playground.
Just explain what it is for people who might not know.
The Bronco Buster is your opponent is in one of the corners. You run up towards them and leap crotch first to their chest, jump up and down.
Did you have a ring at school?
We built one. We were, you know, during school playgrounds, we get enough chairs and build like a ring in part of the playground. If you get thrown over like the chair that you eliminated for the Royal Rumble.
Your 90s were really different to my 80s.
All boys school.
Potential WrestleMania moment here for me. So Triple H and China turn on X-Pac at the end of this match. They join the corporation and Road Dogg blasts Triple H with that big nose son of a bitch, Hurst Hunter Hunter. He's finished that jack off.
And then he repeats jack off.
Yeah.
Again.
That's the kind of writing you get on SmackDown these days.
It really is. Jackoff, which is, it's just, I've never really understood that insult because it just sounds a bit Russian. So it's all a bit weird. Like, you jackoff, as in, like, that's an act. It's not, I don't understand what you're calling me. Yeah, that's what I didn't understand about this. So Shane wins the title due to China, and then China seemingly rejoins DX, and then, so X-Pac, but X-Pac doesn't mind. He's okay, even though that she's the one that cost him the title. Why is an X-Pac like, no, mate, get her out, go away. But it doesn't matter any, obviously, because they joined the corporation. But
there's a lot of weird moments in this match. Yeah, so yeah. The story, you know, Shane can't wrestle, and that's the story. He can't wrestle. He's a toad. He's got backup from everyone else. So when Shane is using, he removes his belt and starts beating X-Pac with it, and the referee doesn't ding it for DQ. I'm like, oh, that's a great little character moment. And then X-Pac gets the belt and then hits Shane with it, and the ref doesn't ding him for DQ. I'm like, what's up?
So belt's illegal now?
Yep, yeah. It's full of those, again, Vince Russo car crash TV. Things make sense until you think about it for more than 2 seconds and you go, this makes no sense.
It's like the Mean Street Posse. They're like, there's the Mean Street Posse. And then the commentators know their names. You're like, they haven't had a match. What? What's how do you... What? No, like, just come on. It's little things. It's really not that difficult.
I think Pete Gass was notorious, though.
Why doesn't Test have a T-shirt on as well? Test is ringside with Shane McMahon.
He's just been doing a thing with Motley Crue, hasn't he?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But saying that, it's... I kind of enjoyed it, this match. It was silly. It didn't make any sense. It's pure Russo. But it's all right. It's fun.
Well, if you kind of enjoyed this, I'm fairly certain in saying you won't have enjoyed what we're going to talk about next, which was The Undertaker versus Big Boss Man inside Hell in a Cell. We got a hype video for this, which was a rarity on this show. It included the iconic image of Stephanie's teddy getting burned and Vince being on his knees crying, although it would later be revealed it was a setup all along. Punch, punch, kick, kick, yawn, yawn, man gets hung. That's what happened in this match.
On the end bit. Man gets hanged in the centre of the ring, and then they cut to the WWF Rage Party VT. Man's still hanging in ring. No one calling anybody. Man hanging in ring. Why is no one doing anything?
It's symbolic. It's a metaphor.
As he keeps on shouting, it's
symbolic. Is it symbolic?
Is it symbolic? Because you've just apparently tied a noose around someone's neck and he's in the middle of the ring dangling. I mean, come on, people.
You can imagine Vince kind of going, listen, Ray, this is what I want you to do is you're going to hang from the ring. And Boss Man going, I'd really rather not, to be honest. It sounds quite dangerous, this. But he was talked into it and there you go. Bet the kids in attendance were asking Mum and Dad some questions.
It's amazing how immediate everyone in the ring realizes that's bad. That it's a bad creative decision. So the moment the cage, Boss Man is dangling there, you get Cole going, is this symbolic, to try and cover up the gaps?
But Cole, no, it's literal. Yeah, he's literally hanging there.
This is young Michael Cole. He's nowhere near equipped to call this match, or pretty much any of the matches at this WrestleMania.
Which is why he gets dumped for the main event and has to announce JR, which is also awkward.
So Cole is immediately trying to cover up, going, is this symbolic? You can almost see it in Taker and everyone else's, and there's like a very audible intake of breath from the entire audience going, that's not... I've never seen something just immediately like, nope, how do we get rid of... Oh, we can't get rid of this. You can't break kayfabe in this situation. Well, credit to Boss Man.
The answer is cut to the WWF Rage Party VT.
With the cherry poppin' daddies.
And Isaac Hayes singing Chocolate Salty Balls. Oh, 90s.
It was very popular at the time. Speaking of music, Taker's music had a bit of a rejig at this point, Carrie. It started with him spouting some gibberish and then asking us to accept the Lord of Darkness as your saviour, allow the purity of evil to guide you. A bit rockier, crap match, weird twist to the gimmick, but he gets some credit for changing up his character again. In the same way we spoke about Kane, it's potentially a one-dimensional thing, The Undertaker, but he made sure that he kept himself relevant for over two decades.
Well, kind of, but, I've said this before.
Your face didn't say kind of there. It said fart in church.
I take the point about in terms of his character switching up, but it's still incredibly boring as we go backwards. The matches are not different.
He's getting worse as well as he gets younger. And I love Boss Man. I think Boss Man is a fascinating big man. But this is one of the big learnings. And Carrie said, you said this like 22? And the Mark Henry match, going, I'm bored of Undertaker matches now.
They're the same. And when you're watching them in quick succession, you notice it more that there's not that much different going on in the ring. Okay, his character, yes, might be different and you're switching things up and you're getting the little details changed. But in what we're seeing in terms of the matches, not that different. And I'm going to say something about the hanging thing. It made me feel sick to see. And not just because it's hugely tasteless, but what you were saying, Matt, it looks dangerous. And again, watching it in retrospect, WWE stunts have not always gone right. And I'm watching that thinking, you were running things very, very close to the wind a lot of times, and that looks horrible.
Well, the big boss man in this match is Vince's the corporation's head of security. During the storyline, Undertaker turns up at Vince's house and threatens him and the entire family. I'd fire your head of security, mate. That is, he's a terrible head of security. I mean, he doesn't deserve to be hanging in the middle of the ring, but, I mean, that's a terrible head of security.
It's such weird, racial, not racial undercurrent. So he burns an effigy on Vince McMahon's front lawn, and then he lynches a man. And I'm like, but what? Who is the good guy? Yeah, I watched it with my 22-year-old brother, and he just thought, this is the most bizarre thing I've ever seen in my life.
And to be fair, Axel, I think that it's difficult for a head of security to keep an eye on someone who is the Lord of Darkness if it's the Lord of Darkness threatening you. It's, you know, it's a tricky job.
And also a limo driver in disguise with the famous, "Where to, Stephanie?" which Stephanie tweeted about the other day that still haunts her dreams. Like, yeah, mine too, Steph. Mine too. So that was that. Really, really strange. If you want to go back and watch that, then do. But I wouldn't recommend it. And nor would I recommend this. Sable versus Tory. A Road Warrior-like pop for Sable. And then, Carrie, it went downhill from there.
Yeah, my big takeaway from this match was how amazing Sable's breasts look. So that's all I wrote in my notes.
Nicole Bass gets involved.
Oh, my God.
What do you remember about Nicole Bass? A bodybuilder and actress. She came to prominence through appearances on the Howard Stern show. She'd die following a stroke at the age of 52. She had a sort of strange run here, didn't she? She was a giant of a woman.
She was. And it's another one of those ones that... Vince obviously looked at like the bodybuilder thing, like the mainstream celebrity kind of angle, and wasn't quite sure how to use her. And the crowd never knew how to react to her either, as far as I can tell. Another sad story, sad wrestling story.
This is peak Grim Lawler as well, isn't it, this match?
Is this table rising?
Is this table rising? Look at those cheeks. More Playboy references. And then effectively, it's like hearing a middle-aged man coming in his pants at the end, isn't it? It's absolutely disgusting.
Have you got anything to say about this match, Carl?
Just Sable. Sable is fascinating because she is somewhere in between diva, as we know it and talk about, and women's wrestler. And she will oscillate wildly between the two, mid-match and mid-feud and whatnot. So there's parts where she comes and it's like, I'm a legitimate sporting athlete. I come here to fight. And then she'll hold the belt above her and just start twerking.
Did she invent the twerk?
No, she didn't.
I presume we'll talk more about Sable next week because she has a big role at 14 as well, doesn't she?
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, well, let's move on to somebody we're going to talk about for the first time. Jeff Jarrett and Owen Hart with Deborah defeated D'Lo Brown and Test with Ivory. This is our first look at Owen. Who would like to talk about him?
Owen Hart is Mandem because Owen Hart was in A Nation of Domination.
Mandem is millennial speak for
friend and ally to black people.
Okay.
I love the Nation of Domination, my friend. You know, Owen Hart was in there. I didn't even think to question it because Owen Hart had a very bizarre wrestling career, made a lot of gimmicks that shouldn't have work because of his enthusiasm and gracefulness in the ring. And Owen Hart, by all accounts, was a great human being. So, of course, Owen Hart was in a stable that was all about black empowerment. Why would I question that? God, he was a good boy.
We know that he died in tragic circumstances in a WWF ring. I'm sure people are aware of the details of that, but go and look it up if you want to. Anton, he was a brilliant in-ring technician. We're going to find that out as the weeks roll on. But as Carl said, he was a good character. He turned his hand to a lot of things. But in terms of his actual wrestling, superb.
Yeah, so WrestleMania 15 is the first one I didn't watch. Effectively, the ones we go back from now, I'm watching for the first time or, you know, as a whole for the first time. And I've kind of tried to stay away from Owen Hart so I can, you know, from his backstory and so I can enjoy it as a fan for the first or second time I've seen his matches. Because I want to enjoy it of a pureness as a fan. So I've tried not to go too much into I obviously know his backstory, but I've tried not to watch too many of his matches and to watch too many of his promos so I can look at this for the first time and enjoy it properly as a fan. But even in a relatively minor tag match, you can just see how good it is. This spinning heel kick is beautiful. He leads the match. Yeah, in all the matches you will watch over the next four or five, he's clearly just an exceptionally class act. And it shouldn't make it any more tragic because the death of anybody is awful, but it does. I mean, it really does.
Mm. And he was with Jeff Jarrett here, who the Raw after he died, which is amazing that they went and did that event, never mind carry on the show that he died. Jeff Jarrett did a really lovely tribute to him saying it's the kind of business where you have lots of acquaintances but very few friends, and Owen was a friend and he cries all the way through it, and I did watching it too. So they defeated D'Lo Brown and Test. They had Ivory with them. Strange team, D'Lo Brown and Test. They'd got this match as a result of winning a pre-show battle royal. They became a tag team. They didn't really want to. It was all a bit odd. Jeff Jarrett, Kerry, how do you spell that?
Yeah, I don't know. How would I ever know that?
J-E-F-F-J-A-R-R-E-T-T-J.
How could you know that? If only someone had told us that before, I would have known.
He's an interesting character, isn't he? His WWF run ended in acrimony, but they got him back this year for the Hall of Fame, which is kind of nice, given that he's had a rough time of his own over the last decade or so.
Yeah, some of it entirely self-inflicted. But yeah, what you say about him paying tribute to Owen and the Raw afterwards, I think I'm right in saying he was also next out to the ring after Owen died. Is that right in that pay-per-view? So obviously Jeff and Owen being close friends, and then Jeff and Deborah were waiting out in gorilla position as they were clearing the ring. So Jeff had to go out there and do his match.
I think at that point they didn't know he died.
Yeah. But this whole match kind of made my heart hurt quite a lot just seeing them together. So I'm not going to say anything too scornful or mocking.
We can do that about the next thing, though, because it's a real oddity in WrestleMania history, but something which was kind of glorious to watch again because Bart Gunn didn't die. I'm talking about Butterbean versus Bart Gunn in the Brawl for All. Before we get to that, Axel, explain the Brawl for All, this one-time tournament that was supposed to be legit and ended up being just hilarious.
I would love to be able to explain it, but it's so bonkers when you say it out loud. People will go, no, that wasn't a thing. I didn't believe it was a thing. So Brawl for All was effectively a Russo fever dream where he wanted to legitimise some kind of combat sport and basically said to the roster, right, who wants to go and fight in a ring? And there's $75,000 up for grabs or something like that. And then we're going to have a tournament and mix it with some legitimate kind of fighters, and some have got pro backgrounds, and go for it. And obviously some of them said yes, and they got very hurt.
You could... Throw boxing punches, but you could kick as well.
Exactly.
Three rounds, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah.
Three 1-minute rounds, and there was also a judge involved. The plan was Dr. Death, Steve Williams.
Yeah, JR's boy.
Fantastic name, by the way.
Dull as ditchwater.
Dull as ditchwater. But he either had real life fighting chops or was just a hard bastard.
But the whole locker room thought he was nails. They all thought he was going to win it.
He was a scary guy. So the idea was they were going to have the tournament, and inevitably Dr. Death would win, and Dr. Death would then go on to feud with Stone Cold. He gets cleaned out by Bart Gunn. Bart Gunn wins Brawl for All. Knocks the heck out of JBL, which...
Yeah, Bradshaw, you take it.
And then gets to this final at WrestleMania, where Axel...
Where he takes on Butterbean.
And Butterbean was not as friendly and lovely as he sounds.
No, so Butterbean is one of those... If anyone's ever seen Boxcar Homer, the Simpsons episode, it reminds me of that. He's a kind of New York boxer of the time with a pro record, legitimate pro record, but clearly he could handle himself in the ring, effectively.
Unlike Homer in that episode.
Yeah. But effectively a sort of, a glove for hire. Comes into the ring... And just destroys this poor guy. Clocks him right out in how many seconds?
And it's a punch that, I mean, I remember at the time watching it as a kid and thinking, oh, he's dead, that guy.
Barbain is the IWA boxing champion at the time. He's a knockout specialist. He very often does like the Howard Stern. He did a Jackass segment where Johnny Knoxville basically wrapped himself in bubble wrap and would try and knock me out, and Butterbean did.
And then Johnny Knoxville, when he comes to, goes, is Butterbean okay? Which was quite funny.
This guy was renowned for fighting power, which begs the question, if your entire idea was, we're going to get Steve Williams over, and then he doesn't work, but you get Bart Gunn, why do you risk embarrassing Bart Gunn by making fight a non-wrestler in Butterbean, who... By all counts, Butterbean was angry walking out of the ring. He looked as if he had something to prove to the world. And, he gets a knocked down within the first 5 seconds. Bart is not looking great. Stands up. Bart tries to throw a punch. Gets hit with one of the biggest right hands you will see. And, this is peak Vince Russo. Here's an idea. My goodness. It was just... Vince Russo can do a lot of good wrestling stuff. And there was the part... Think about a decade ago in TNA where it turned out Vince Russo was writing their scripts under a fake name, and Dixie Carter basically went, wrestling fans like Vince Russo, as long as they don't know it's Vince Russo. And if you give Vince Russo a very good editor, basically, no, that's nonsense, cut this down, you will eventually get to a really good nugget. And 1997 to 1999 was a really interesting time for all combat sports because UFC was becoming a thing. And you will see this a lot. Ken Shamrock is popping up, boxers are popping up, and they're all trying to figure out what the next big leap is. And then, like, WWE tries this every now and again. We're like, we're going to have a UFC-style match. We'll bring in someone from the Ultimate Fighting world, because it wasn't UFC at the time. And I think Shane McMahon, near the end, before he left the very first time, basically went, I'm going to try and buy UFC. And that was one of his big things that got nixed. And then basically Triple H now looks like he'll inherit everything. But yeah, this is again one of the big, like, we're trying to figure out what the next big thing is, because boxing looks like it's dying, but no one figured it out. And even then, UFC still can't figure out now, because they nick everything from WWE. So it's a weird situation from all these weird people who get too many concussions.
Yeah, they went from trying to own combat sports, and then they tried to own reality TV. Mm. And there's always something they're trying to look for the next thing. And I could see what they were trying to do. And it makes sense from a business point of view as well. You know, you've got to protect your product and you've got to try and grow it. Look out for your competitors.
That was Brawl for All. Next, we're going to talk about what I am going to posit was the worst intercontinental title match of all time at WrestleMania. Road Dogg, the champion, defeated Goldust with the Blue Meanie and Ryan Shamrock, of course. Ken Shamrock and Val Venus. Favourite Ryan Shamrock moment, Gary?
No idea.
Was it a rubbish match?
I've got nothing written about this.
Okay, well, that suggests that maybe it was.
No idea. And Cole's looking equally confused.
I have nothing in my notes about this.
Have I made this up?
Goldust had the Blue Meanie in this corner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I didn't imagine this.
And the Blue Meanie and Ryan Shamrock were arguing amongst themselves, and that is sort of why Goldust lost the match, and it was all Ryan Shamrock's fault because she's a woman, basically.
Yeah. Huh. Weird. I didn't imagine that.
it was all, like, really odd. And also, by this point, so Shamrock's been in the company 2 years, I think, by this point. And he's a shell of the man that came in, isn't he? I mean, he's really, like, bad, and there's no aura around him. And he's not, you know, he's supposed to be this big, scary, sort of cage-fighting guy. And he's just somebody that, you know, tries to control his sister. It's all a bit sad, really, isn't it? It all just petered out really quickly for Shamrock.
Yeah, we'll talk about him next week, and there's certainly more of an intensity about him then. Final match we'll talk about. Hardcore Holly defeated Al Snow and Billy Gunn, who was the champion in the Hardcore title match. This wasn't great. I wonder, either Carl or Anton, was Carrie a little bit harsh on Al Snow last week? I always thought he was solid, if unspectacular, but Carrie seems to think he's dreadful.
Like many things on this podcast, you stare at it long enough, like, oh yeah, Carrie was right. Yeah.
I think maybe I'm sort of biased toward him a little because he seemed like quite a nice bloke on Tough Enough and stuff.
As a trainer, he seemed like a nice guy. Yeah, I completely agree. I never liked the head. I never got the head character. And it was not. It's not. Isn't it?
It's what everybody
wants. I understand it. I just never really understood why it was. It was popular. And that's what I didn't understand. Why is this so popular?
I liked him having "Help Me" written across his forehead.
Yeah. I enjoyed the variety of weapons in this match. So there was a hockey stick, someone used the broom. I was like, ah, yay, weapons other than kendo sticks and dustbin lids. It's below cromulent. It's, again, part of the fun. Oh, yeah, Billy Gunn. They tried so many times to make him work.
He couldn't embiggen this match, though, could he?
He could not embiggen this match.
Bob Holly comes across as a dick again as well. So it's
such,
you know,
a
yeah.
I must confess, and this is a confession, I read his autobiography, Bob Holly. It wasn't very good.
But he shocked me.
He did have a fight with a bear once, and he really doesn't like Triple H at all.
A fight with a bear or a wrestle with a bear?
Oh, a wrestle, yeah.
Okay, because all the greats wrestled a bear. Daniel Bryan wrestled a bear.
Bob Holly
wrestled a bear. Stu Hart used to have a bear underneath the Hart house.
It's a weird business, isn't it, wrestling? WrestleMania moments, Carrie, you can go first.
Oh, you didn't mention my favourite bit, which was Val Venus and everyone just laughing at him, because I actually quite enjoy Val Venus, despite it just being absolutely grotesque. And I enjoy that he has that kind of element of self-satirization, which a lot of wrestlers don't have. And I think it's just really interesting to see the way that he puts himself across, the way he's presented compared to the way that they'd start to present the Divas in a couple of years' time. So, yeah, Val Venus, shout out to him.
And there was, of course, he's part of one of the most memorable lines in company history, choppy, choppy, your pee-pee. Look that up if you like.
Don't Google that, listeners. Please don't.
Oh, you've got to be very careful with the actual phrasing of that when you put it into... You have to add Kai and Tai at the end of it, otherwise...
Don't do it in a public library or something.
Yeah, the police will come and knock in. Carl, did you have a WrestleMania moment?
I'm going to use this time to give a shout out to Mark Yeaton, who is the...
The timekeeper.
The timekeeper and the man who supplies Stone Cold Steve Austin with his beer at the end of a match. There's a lovely bit on the Austin podcast where he interviews Mark Yeaton and basically goes... You know, you were throwing me between 6 to 12 beers every big main event match, and I'm shotgunning them after wrestling for 25 minutes. I used to get drunk pretty quickly. And also, how did we never, you very rarely see Stone Cold drop a beer when he does this. I think I had notes from, maybe it was WrestleMania 30 where he dropped one. I was so shocked. And it was just a great conversation he had with Mark. He's like, how did we always just know what to do? Just a nice mention to the man behind the beer magic, Mark Yeaton.
Axel?
Mine's also... I still can't get used to that. Mine's also Stone Cold beer. It's seen Earl Hebner with a beer, celebrating with Stone Cold in the ring at the end of the match as well. I was like, his little face, he's beaming, his little face. He's like, because he's in the main event of Mania in what was a great match as well. And it's just like, of course it means something to him as well. Yeah, good for you, Will.
He actually took a couple of those beers and sold them behind the couple of beers back outside the arena. Mine is a couple of signs. I need a poop. I wonder what the person who took that to WrestleMania 19 years later thinks about it. And pork is kosher. I mean... that was a sign that was held up in this event, and there you go. That's wrestling.
Because then there's been controversy about Hell in a Cell recently about certain signs being
confiscated.
Yeah. So yeah, this is a wow. I mean, that's pork. I don't know why pork is kosher has made me laugh so much.
No, don't be.
Could have one more.
Yeah,
it's Michael Cole trying to sell across the danger of Hell in a Cell. So before I talked about how JR re-understood how to sell that Hell in a Cell is like a great life altering. Thing and Michael Cole just popped up and goes, Hell in a Cell is different from a cage, you might get your finger caught in there.
Oh, that was so weird. In the first match he says that.
Yeah, Michael Cole says you might get your finger caught in the cage in Hell in a Cell in the Bossman match, and Lawler's just going, what, you get a finger caught in there? So I think you can hurt yourself a lot more than getting your finger caught.
As Bossman would find out. Next week, WrestleMania 14 is on the agenda. Don't worry, folks, it's way better than the last two lame offerings. We've got Austin's Ascension, Mike Tyson, Terry Funk, Triple H versus Owen Hart, and plenty more besides. Carrie, where can people keep up with you on the tweets?
On the Twitters at Carrie Sparkle.
And also, you're doing a run in a couple of weeks, aren't you? tell people about that and what you can do to support it.
Yes, I am running the Bournemouth Marathon at the start of October, and I am raising money for Great Ormond Street Hospital in memory of a friend of mine who died in May. So if anyone was interested in sponsoring me, you can do by either tweeting me and I'll send you the link, or you can go straight to justgiving.com/Carrie Bournemouth.
Carl, if people want to keep up with your musings on wrestling and the retweets that you do, which are always from really funny accounts, which make me think, oh, I'm not very good at Twitter. Where can I do that?
Anchorman 616.
And
pink kits. He's obsessed with pink kits, isn't he? As well?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that Man United one.
I like it.
I'm a millennial. I like millennial pink.
And they ripped it off Dulwich Hamlet, and it reminds me of that and episode Juventus. Of Friends where Rachel put a red sock in the first time she did a wash and everything came out pink. Anyway, Anton, at Sky Anton,
at
I
Sky
believe,
Anton,
is the place to keep up to date
is,
with you.
It's nowhere near as interesting as Carl's, though, so.
All right, well, thanks for listening. Rate, review, share, subscribe, please. I've been Matt Davis-Adams. Don't forget to follow us, too, at the PU Podcast, and I am at MJDAFC. Thanks for listening once more. You've been in Parts Unknown.
The Parts Unknown Wrestling Podcast is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.